Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? This is going to be a two-part interview, this week and next week, with Jack Brewer. If you're a Patreon, you've already heard this entire interview in one spot. I posted it about a week or so ago. Otherwise, you'll get this, as I said, in two parts. And Jack has published a book called The Greys Have Been Framed. And in my opinion, this is must-read for anyone really interested in the UFO phenomenon. Not interested necessarily in furthering their own personal beliefs about it, but anyone who wants to get to get the noise out of the equation a little bit. Jack has done a fantastic job of researching stuff and showing where some of this stuff really isn't what it seems to be. That being said, he's not a debunker or a close-minded skeptic or anything like that. I highly recommend checking out his book. We cover a little bit of what he talks about in the book in here, and we get into a bunch of other stuff as well. As far as other things going on, in about a month, down in Pennsylvania, Timothy Renner is involved in something called the Albatwitch Fest, or something like that. I think it's Albatwitch Fest. That's how he says it. I always thought it was Albatwitch, but Albatwitch Day 2017. Down in by Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and that is on the 14th of October. It goes from about 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., and I'm planning on going down to that. Obviously, Timothy Renner will be there, and not only is he a regular in this show, but of course he does Strange Familiars. His band Stone Breath will be playing, as well as a bunch of other music. There's going to be paranormal vendors, some talks, and all kinds of fun stuff, and it's free. So if you're in the area and you'd like to meet up there, I'd be totally awesome to meet some of you people that are listening in person. So that is probably going to be the place to do it, unless something happens that makes it impossible for me to go. It's about a four-hour drive from me, so I don't think it's going to be a huge problem. So, Albatwitch Day 2017. All right. So with that, if you want to become a patron and help out, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com, which is where you can find all Where Did the Road Go stuff. And I'm going to do a little update here sooner or later talking about all the stuff going on. I don't like to fill the beginning of the shows with me rambling. I just like to get right into the interviews, which is part one right here. Jack Brewer, The Greys Have Been Framed. All right, well, welcome to the show, Jack.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And you have written a book that has an awesome title called The Greys Have Been Framed.
Yes, sir, I have.
When did that come out?
It hit the Amazon website in December of 2015 and really started getting eyes all through 2016.
Okay. Now, are there hard copies of this as well?
Yes, sir, there are. They can be ordered by ebook or hard copy from Amazon.
And as I told you, I feel that this book is up there with what should be required reading for people who are genuinely interested in the UFO phenomena.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm glad you and others have found it a worthy read. Thank you.
I think some people, if they start reading this, are going to come away with the idea that you're a debunker.
Sure. And sure. The same could be said for my blog. That has been somewhat of a criticism. As I hope you gathered from reading it, I think our community at large could use a lot more critical thinking and not jumping to conclusions. And that doesn't mean there aren't points of interest to follow. And I encourage people researching any direction they want to go. I just think that it's responsible to correctly differentiate between our supposition and what we can demonstrate to be actually true.
You, in your closing thoughts, you said something that I thought was dead on. You said ufology is primarily characterized in North America as very poor in quality. Websites, radio shows, and those featured on them often present sensational material with little regard for either accuracy or the consequences of failing to prioritize it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost in some circumstances as if people, as I wrote there, the websites and the radio shows don't even expect people to take them seriously. It's like you see the term UFO-tainment thrown around a lot these days. Mm. And, you know, to some of us, we were sincerely interested in this stuff and wanted to learn more about it. And it seems to have gotten as difficult as ever to identify reasonable places to get information.
Yeah, when I started this show, I had no interest in the sensational material. I want to know what we can really learn about this type of stuff, and not just the UFO field, but anything paranormal, because I think it really tells us a lot about ourselves as much as anything else. But I really doubt, you know, I did not have faith that anyone would care if I wasn't doing a sensationalized type of topics, but I was very pleasantly surprised to find out I was wrong. There seems to be a lot of people who want to actually get into this stuff deeply and aren't just looking for the quick sensationalized stuff that's just all over the place.
I appreciate your efforts in that way. It's not easy to do, and it requires having a bit of a more intellectual audience, a more serious audience, and I really want to support yours and anybody's efforts that, like I say, just differentiate between speculation and what we can actually put over on the side of the page is stuff that we know is accurate.
Right, right. And there's nothing wrong with speculating or anything like that as far
no.
as I'm concerned. It's when people start touting speculation as proof or, you know, fact.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And sure, I mean, like anybody, I enjoy sitting around a campfire, looking up at the stars, contemplating, discussing. Sure, absolutely. But as you're suggesting, the UFO community got to where that was encouraged and allowed more and more, to the point that we ended up with conferences and popular speakers that proclaim as fact just complete speculation, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and it's really an alarming state of affairs at this point.
Well, it seems to have gone so far off the tracks. You know, like when you look at what do we actually know about this stuff versus what do people purport to know and believe about it? And they seem to be very different things at this point.
I agree completely. In fact, a guy I used to interact with once wrote that everything we know about UFOs could fit on the back of a postcard. And, you know, while I think it's a valid point, you know, it certainly might, you know, be somewhat of an analogy, but it's an interesting point. And what I think makes that even more important, like where we're kind of headed with this discussion, is people are getting hurt in the process that buy into these apocalyptic world being taken over conspiracies of these aliens and government agencies that are harming Americans, and it gets really difficult to take what we know to be true from authentic documents and FOIA topics and then sort it out it becomes more and more difficult, and people have certainly been hurt in the process. While there was the rise of the hypnotic regression segment of ufology and any number of sects, you could almost say, you know, offshoots that believe different things. And of course, that's why there's so many comparisons to churches at times within the UFO genre and paranormal topics. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot we could discuss about these dynamics.
And you do believe, I'm assuming we're on the same page here, that people are having real unusual and unknown experiences. It's just that it's kind of being hijacked.
I certainly would not argue they're not. I'll put it that way. It's difficult to prove a negative, but I'm completely convinced a large percentage of people are sincere and that they believe they have experienced things they don't understand. And I think they have. Where I think a lot of problems come in is that they then think they can draw conclusions about what it was based on self-proclaimed experts and things other people believe, and the critical thinking process is kind of breaking down there to where we think that symptoms of alien abduction can suggest more alien abductions when we really haven't even conclusively established what those symptoms are, or that there's even aliens, and it just kind of becomes a circular loop of bad logic. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot more for science to uncover, and we certainly don't know all the mysteries of the universe. It's a fascinating environment and world and universe, and I don't know what all happens to people, but I just request that we all be a little more responsible and claiming we know, and especially when we're trying to inform others of things that we see happen at UFO conferences, UFO discussion forums within the genre, where people are explaining to others what their experiences were. And I think that even starts to discourage us from wanting to talk about what we've seen or what we suspect, because we're going to get each of our arms pulled in a different direction by people that try to tell us that it was a government operation, or it was aliens, or it was a ghost, or it was a premonition about your relative that's going to pass away. And it becomes really difficult for a person that's sincere to not just become pretty cynical about it.
How did you get into doing this type of research? What got you interested?
Well, like most people, I had an interest all my life, like you said, about paranormal stuff in general. When I was a kid, I watched Night Gallery and all the shows about paranormal phenomena, and found it pretty fascinating. And I think also, like most people, as I got into adulthood, I kind of got away from it while I was, you know, trying to earn a living and raise a family and whatnot, and then eventually came back to it in the early 1990s. I began attending the conferences and reading the books by Strieber, John Mack, the popular authors. Was absolutely fascinated and was like, wow. And I had more questions, and eventually I began asking these questions and trying to get to some of the stuff that it seemed like wasn't in their presentations and in their books. And with some of these figures, it seemed like there were even glaring things that would fail to be addressed. And in 2010, I began writing the blog, The UFO Trail, and I was blogging about my interactions with people and questions I'd have and how it went. And I got pretty disillusioned and felt like that there was a whole industry that wanted to perpetuate the mystery instead of actually trying to put accurate information on the table. And I still feel that's the case. And I empathize with people that feel they've had experiences and want to learn more about them, and witnesses to UFO sightings, and people that feel they've maybe lived in a house that had some type of spirit. I empathize with all of that, and I'd just like to see us discuss it a little more responsibly, or at least identify entertainment as entertainment when that's the case.
Okay. Have you ever had any weird experiences yourself?
To some extent, yes, sir, I have. When I was a child, I saw what at the time I identified as a UFO, and I kind of weigh my words carefully around that, because I've since come to read about memory and the material put out by the memory experts. And so I would say I have a memory of an odd UFO sighting as a child. And of course, that added to my interest. I eventually became okay with just accepting I really don't know what happened. And as we mentioned about, you know, memory, I now know that I really, and I mean literally, don't know what happened, because I've processed the thought so many times since an event some 40 years ago that it becomes difficult to sort out what you thought about, what you speculated, what actually happened, that one could kind of compare to trying to differentiate between one Christmas or another when you were 6 or 8 or 10 years old. Can get difficult in the memory. But the answer to your question would be yes, I've perceived some odd things. I've known people well that certainly I think were sincere and didn't understand some things that were happening to them. And so I do think it's an interesting topic. And as you suggested, I'm certainly open to learning more about it.
I don't trust any of my memories beyond a certain point. Like, you know, I feel like it's really hard when you're a kid because you're interpreting the world in such a different way. But around the time I started, when I was like 18 or 19, I started writing everything down, because I've had quite a lot of weird experiences in my life, and it was recommended that I write things down. And I, you know, when I go back and look at that stuff, I could see, although they're pretty accurate, there are the occasional things where I'm like, really, that was what happened there? Huh. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, cause I wrote stuff down immediately when it was fresh in my mind. And, you know, 20 years later, I'm looking back on it going, huh, so that's who was with me. I could have sworn it was so-and-so, you know? But
right.
It's little things. Like the main part of the event is still there. I had that remembered right. It was just, there are details that I have completely forgotten. You know, or other things happened in conjunction with it that I didn't even remember ever happening. And I'm really glad I wrote all this stuff down.
Sure. That's a great thing to do. I'd suggest it too, and I support your decision to do that. Most people just won't. So it's pretty extraordinary that you bothered to do it. That's really commendable. And I support that, and I'd encourage other people to do it as well. Keep a diary of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I've talked with Jeff Ritzman about numerous times, recording stuff around it's also important, because you get to see whether or not there's something liminally going on. Because I found that, like, my one major UFO sighting happened at a huge turning point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think to look for that, but luckily I put down enough details in recording stuff that I went, that's when that happened? Huh.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, and some context of like, what was I doing in my life when I was, when this chain of events took place, and why might I have looked at it this way? Yeah, it's really helpful to know that.
So how would you suggest that people differentiate between beliefs and actual data? Like, I know that's a really hard question, but
I think that some of it's already kind of clarified for us, and like the professional research community recognizes certain materials, authenticated documents, information contained in journals, professional trade journals. We can look at published papers and clinical trials and get that kind of information. As far as just what someone sees and reports later, I don't think there's much we can do there but just suspend judgment to wait and see more. And I know that is a big frustration with the UFO community, but I've definitely come to prefer suspension of judgment than just being wrong or being premature.
I feel like what we might be dealing with, and I think your book kind of solidified this a little for me, is that people might be having what amounts to a shamanic sort of experience, an altered state, something to that effect that's meant to actually move them forward on a more spiritual level, give them some sense of progression, but instead it's getting hijacked by this belief in extraterrestrials and these people who want to perpetuate this belief.
That could certainly be on the list of possibilities. If we just made a list, there could be, I don't know, hundreds of possibilities. And I can empathize with valuing that one. There's certainly spiritual traditions that give different values, look at different states of consciousness in different ways than the typical Western paradigm. And yeah, I think that a lot of things like that should be on the table, especially, I guess one of my pet peeves, Soraya, is a lot of people in the UFO community could tell you they're virtually walking encyclopedias of alien abduction. They can just reel off cases and dates and what happened, and they can tell you what they believe the symptoms are, and they can tell you how to communicate and all of this stuff. And then, as you so aptly bring up, there are other ways to look at it. And yet these people that, in some cases, not everybody, but some of our community are so entrenched in the ET narrative and seem to be so deeply interested in the topic, but don't read anything about Eastern religions and Eastern philosophies, or they don't read anything by the memory experts, or they don't look at any of the qualified experts that tell us what a certain percentage, not all necessarily, but at least some of these reports could be attributed to. And so that's kind of one of my pet peeves is, yeah, there are other philosophies, there's other ways of looking at all of this that a lot of our community, or at least some of it, seem to just put themselves in an echo chamber and just don't even want to know what some of the answers could be. Or, and like I say, in some circumstances, definitely are, a certain percentage of these reports are attributable to things that we can identify. We don't know which reports exactly necessarily, but yeah, some of them are false memories or different circumstances that, as I say, the qualified experts can elaborate on. And that stuff deserves ample attention as compared to the Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs repetitious narrative.
So you've brought up memory a few times. Do you want to? How is your understanding on how memory works at this point?
My understanding that it is based on the readings I've done of Elizabeth Loftus, Julia Shaw, and some others in the field, is that it's not a matter of if we have faulty memories, but how faulty are they? And that doesn't make us a weak human being. It doesn't make us defective. It's part and parcel of being a human being, is to have memory discrepancies. So we need to take that into account. And we definitely, it's my understanding, based on the experts, that memory techniques to enhance memory simply are not reliable. And as Dr. Loftus, her work has shown, may even be damaging. And it's my personal opinion from speaking with people that have undergone regressive hypnosis and worked years trying to remember things, it's my personal opinion that it very much can be damaging to people to keep trying to uncover traumatic memories or suspicions that they have hidden memories. And that's actually another topic we could touch on, that our community that longs so much to find more information, yet seem to perpetually not educate itself on good mental health and good mental health practices. And we have some real problems with perpetuating these traumatic beliefs among people that are already traumatized and even by their own admission are traumatized. And the mental health community does not subscribe to leading traumatized people to believe they've been abused by extraterrestrials. And so, yeah, memory really is a big part of the issue here. And if we read what the qualified experts tell us, if we watch their presentations, if we at least give it a spot at the table along with all of this other stuff, we should take some of their warnings about not putting too much emphasis on, you know, witness testimony or even our own memories that can be and are fallible and in some circumstances are not entirely accurate, if at all.
And I mean, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people still think that that memory works like a computer. The data just gets recorded and then they retrieve the recording. But from how I understand it, memory is something where your mind recreates what you're trying to remember.
Correct. And there's just, again, I'd mentioned Loftus and Shaw, that they have just done study after study after study that shows irrefutably that memory can be incorrect and that people don't recall things as they happen and that they'll argue about it and that they, as you say, in some circumstances even mistakenly believe that memories are more reliable when retrieved through hypnosis or by enhancement techniques when they're conclusively less. And I really don't know any other way to say it than some of the leadership of the UFO community has really done a disservice to the public at large in perpetuating some of these beliefs, and then even worse, not retracting them, as qualified scientists have done clinical studies that show otherwise, yet our community just like refuses to even take it into consideration in large part.
Now, do you think that's because it's intentional, or they're just unintentionally being blind to it, or they just don't know?
My opinion would be all of the above at different times and depending on who we're talking about. And that's one of the dynamics that I think makes it difficult to discuss in group settings and when we don't nail down specific instances, is I think some people are just dishonest. I mean, let's face it. Then there's others that really don't know any better but think they know what they're talking about. Then there's people that just really want to believe, and so they're going to keep saying that they just know how to do hypnosis right and that kind of thing. And there's just no such way as doing it right to retrieve accurate memories. It's just not reliable. And so at the end of the day, in my opinion, we have people that aren't thinking critically, so not only are they misunderstanding circumstances such as hypnosis and the role it's played in the UFO community, but they take that as a personal criticism of their experiences. And it's not the same thing. Like, you and I can be we can question some investigative techniques. We can question some stories that have been cultivated and perpetuated. And that doesn't mean that I'm telling people they didn't see something weird in the sky or that they didn't experience something strange in their home. Maybe they did, I don't know. But I can conclusively tell you that based on what qualified experts have studied and concluded, hypnosis isn't going to necessarily help you know any more about it, and it probably will hinder the process.
Now, do you think that it is, you know, like, say, a 1 in 100 chance that hypnosis might turn up an actual memory? I know we can't, part of the problem would be even if it did, we couldn't determine whether it was true or not.
Right. I think that since anything uncovered during hypnosis would still have to be corroborated to accept as factual, just like any other witness statement, I don't see where it has any effective use when it can even potentially harm people. Like Judy Jafar, for instance, is another therapist that comes to mind that has spoken out adamantly about, as you were saying, Soraya, people believe that it's some kind of truth serum, that hypnosis is some kind of truth serum, and then you just rewind the tape and play it and you get all the information. And Judy Jafar has explained that the trauma then is real, even if the memory is incorrect. And then you can never go back to not having that trauma and not having those thoughts, even if you're shown you physically weren't even in that city on that date, that time. You still have the series of false memories. So given that the case, I just don't see how it has any value to an investigator. And of course, the scientific community doesn't recognize it as an investigative tool, which brings us to yet another aspect of it. If an organization or a researcher is claiming to be grounded in science, like the Mutual UFO Network or some of the people that work under its umbrella, and these investigators claim to be conducting scientific investigation while they're doing regressive hypnosis work, the two terms are mutually exclusive of one another. You can't be doing science and using hypnosis as an investigative technique. They're just mutually exclusive of one another. So I don't know, like, 1 in 100. I don't know what the percentage would be, but I do know that the current scientific paradigm identifies that hypnosis can be potentially harmful and it's unreliable as memory retrieval tools. So that needs to be embraced and accepted not only by the UFO community, but particularly the aspects of it that claim to be dedicated to scientific study. And I feel pretty firmly about that. That's kind of getting back to, if you're just doing entertainment, then own it. Because, I mean, it's really hard to overemphasize the misrepresentation of scientific activity while people are potentially being harmed. And in some cases, like Emma Woods and Leah Haley, and we could go on, have been harmed, it's really difficult to give it a shrug of the shoulders and say we're alien hunting, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Yeah, it seems like Emma Woods and David Jacobs would be a prime example of that.
I would agree with that. Yes, sir.
And we've talked a little bit about that on the show, but what, I mean, when the hypnosis thing started, we didn't know that much about hypnosis. Is that accurate? Like when Bud Hopkins started hypnotizing people, it wasn't this whole false memory syndrome and all this wasn't really something that we knew about.
Yes and no. We certainly didn't know it to the extent we do today. Dr. Loftus has conducted decades of work that leads her to the conclusion she offers today. However, there were hypnosis experts such as Dr. Martin Orne. He was a CIA consultant and a hypnosis expert. And as early as the 1970s, and probably even earlier than that in the mid-20th century, he was publishing papers that explained that witness statements during hypnosis needed to be corroborated. And he explained that not only was were we fantasy prone during hypnosis, but also that we could intentionally lie, that a person hypnotized can certainly be deceptive if they intend to be. So it again, it's yes and no. We didn't know as much as we know now, but I'm not entirely sure that the UFO hypnosis community wanted to know either. And in my opinion, and this is strictly my opinion, hypnosis provided UFO investigators with a wealth of information that they weren't getting otherwise. And I think that's why they picked up on it so much and were so willing to use it. And I think that they did get skilled at getting people to say what they wanted them to say. I mean, you can listen to these Emma Woods and David Jacobs tapes and hear him just endlessly during hypnosis telling the woman what other subjects told him and then asking her questions about it. It's truly an insult to intelligence to even give it reasonable consideration, in my opinion.
Do you think, what are your thoughts about David Jacobs?
I do not think that virtually anything he has presented even deserves to be taken seriously, would be it in a nutshell. How about you? Do you want to talk about it any?
We could talk about him a little bit. I mean, like I said, we've talked about him before, but I mean, maybe a brief covering for, because occasionally people will ask about David. And
sure.
I have honestly never read one of his books. Like, I would see them in the store and I'd pick it up and be like, yeah, I don't know, this just doesn't click with me. And
right.
So I just never picked one up, never bought one, never read one, don't have any of his books anywhere. And the more I got to know about him and his whole, you know, evil alien thing, I was just kind of like, yeah, this seems even more far-fetched than some of the other stuff. You know, I'm good friends with Peter Robbins, who knows him, and Peter said that, you know, he's a nice guy. You know, regardless of what I may think of his work, he said, you know, he personally, he thinks he's a good guy. But then you look at the stuff with Emma, and it's like, what is really going on there?
Right, right. I just don't see how anything that David Jacobs has presented could really even be taken seriously. The Emma Woods case is just reprehensible. That it's just there is no shoulder shrug, nice guy, in my opinion, and. It's difficult really to even unpack in summary form to me. And I guess I would just say that it's such an insult to intelligence to me to have someone trying to explain to me, as he did. I have an interview on my blog I did with him at the Ozark UFO conference, where he's trying to explain to me how the hybrids reproduce and their physical makeup and their plans and on and on and on, yet cannot demonstrate they exist.
Right.
And this is not science. It's just madness at best. And there's really no argument here. Like, if he's not being exploitive and manipulating people, then I don't know how else to look at it than he's an incompetent moron. How else, and I'm not being rhetorical. How else would you look at that?
Yeah. Yeah. And well, it's also selling him books.
Right, which would be exploitive, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
And he was, some of the stuff you, I mean, I knew the Emma Wood stuff, some of the stuff in your book where you're talking about him, like, oh, what was it? The whole, was it texting or on Messenger? He was having one person hypnotize another, and hybrids were supposedly messaging him from her computer or something.
That's correct. You're correct. His following was hypnotizing one another by instant message. And it's my understanding that he had partaken in this as well. I asked him about it during the interview in the Ozarks, and he said yes, that he believed he was getting text messages from hybrids. And when I asked him if he had done anything to get forensic evidence of this, for instance, he was telling me that they were frequenting the home of a woman he referred to as Elizabeth, among other names. And I asked if any forensic attempts had been made to, you know, scientific attempts to get forensic evidence. And I interpret he didn't even want to talk about it. Like, specifically what he said to me is, you can't get evidence that she lives a long ways away from me. And even if I texted her the whole way and I got there, she has curtains over her window so I couldn't see in. And I thought that was just an absolutely absurd response to a question about forensic evidence. And so, again, I would come back to it, and again, I'm not being rhetorical. Is the defense to I'm dishonest that I'm stupid? Really?
How did the whole hypnotizing UFO witnesses start?
I suppose we could go back to Betty and Barney Hill, and that's debated around UFO circles. It's my understanding that Dr. Benjamin Simon in the early 1960s was attempting to treat trauma with the Hills. He was not conducting a UFO investigation. And this is yet another topic that our community would be well served to learn more about, and that's the therapeutic process with a professional mental health practitioner. A therapist will often not try to sort out issues for a client. It's my understanding that if they say they've been abducted by aliens or they have a certain belief system, the therapist might very well just try to walk them through it and help them clarify the questions that they would want to ask and how they feel about these things to come to better clarity and have enough resolution to function well, to function healthily in our society. And I point that out because it should be understood, in my opinion, that Dr. Simon was not attempting to conduct an investigation. He was attempting to treat the Hills for trauma that they reported sustaining. So he wasn't there to contradict their story one way or the other. But what they talked about during hypnosis, understandably, I guess, became popular within the UFO community. And then we had Dr. Leo Sprinkle and some others begin using hypnosis to try to regain memories. And there were times in our culture as well that it was thought that we might could be regressed through hypnosis to remember things from childhood, maybe even past lives if a person believed in reincarnation. And it's really not surprising that the people that believed this to be true did think they experienced being able to envision these things when hypnotized. So it continued to catch on, and of course, as you pointed out earlier, by the 80s and 90s, Bud Hopkins had gained a lot of popularity in the community. He was charismatic, he was well-liked, and very much promoted hypnosis among alien abductees, and it, as we stated earlier, it provided a lot of evidence that otherwise wouldn't have been there, or at least what people wanted to believe was evidence, and maybe even in some circles was touted as proof when it was really just statements people were making while in a highly suggestive and fantasy-prone state. Now, maybe some odd circumstances actually happened. Maybe some of them had experiences, but I just don't see how it's not just convoluted and the investigative process further undermined by adding the hypnosis card. But basically, I think it started with the Hills and snowballed and seems to finally be coming to a more widely embraced public understanding that it's not a truth serum, finally.
Now, one of the things Bud Hopkins had always said that had stuck with me until somewhat recently was that he was getting like the same symbols from different abductees, and he wasn't publishing them, and he was collecting this as evidence that these people couldn't possibly be giving him the same symbols if these weren't real experiences. But in your book, you talk about how his ex-wife, whose name I just blanked on, what's her name?
Carol Rainey.
Carol Rainey,
Carol
yes.
Carol Rainey, yeah.
noticed it actually has a video up showing him altering some of these symbols to make them look more like one another.
That's the gist of it. Yes. I don't know how much he actually altered them. He did trace them and put them on other sheets of paper. And yes, a lot has been made of this. Carol Rainey does have a video channel that, listeners can look at and see a lot of what we might call counter arguments to the Bud Hopkins narratives. And the video you're particularly talking about, she was shooting and Bud was talking about that these symbols all look the same, that abductees always made the same symbols. And it conclusively, you can see in the video, that's not true. That not only, as you suggest, did he trace them and turn them and put them in manners to make them appear similar, but there were hundreds, if not thousands, of sketchings, scribblings, whatever we want to call them, that he obtained and were mailed to him that he does not show the public when he's pleading his case. And Carol particularly asked him, what do you have in the box, as he's going through them and pulling out the ones he wants to show. And right there during filming, he says, no, I'm not showing these, and makes the statement, and I quote, I want to stack the deck here, is the term he used. So people, Bud Hopkins, his following, ufologists, did get so vested in the argument that they felt that the ends justified the means, and I disagree. I think that that the path to truth has to involve some intellectual honesty, and I appreciate Carol's work that she's done in showing films of what was going on during the so-called investigations. And I've written this before, and I truly believe it. I think that Emma Woods and Carol Rainey have given us some of the most realistic insight yet into what happens in some of the most well-known yet least reliable investigations of alleged alien abduction.
And my impression of Jacobs, though, is very different than my impression of I'm great with names sometimes, versus Bud.
Yes, Bud was much more charismatic and likable. He certainly knew how to be friendly, and he was an artist, somewhat of a showman, we might could even say. David Jacobs, I think, is a bit less of a talented at people skills, might be one way to put it. Not to say he's not talented. He is a likable guy, as you say, Peter Robbins said. I mentioned I interviewed him, and he is friendly and likable. I don't think we should confuse, though, that friendly and likable doesn't mean that what a person's saying makes any sense at all, or deserves to be given credibility.
Of course. Well, I guess the thing is, like, there's no Emma Woods in Bud Hopkins' work. Like, the Emma Woods thing is deplorable, whereas there's nothing really with Bud Hopkins there. I mean, he clearly got a little caught up in, you know, in his belief system and stuff, but it doesn't seem like he went as overboard as David Jacobs did.
I don't know how much I'd agree with that, but I get your point. At the least, publicly, it didn't come out to the extent Emma Woods did. Privately, I have my suspicions that he's got quite a few skeletons in the closet, and my investigation into it revealed, like there's the Dora case that I wrote about in my book, where he was notified by mental health professionals that they didn't feel that it was in this woman's best interest to pursue this belief system, and he didn't let off the gas. And then we have a number of cases that he, at best, chose to cherry pick the way he presented the information. And so I understand your point, and he didn't have the public train wreck that David Jacobs has had over Emma Woods, no. But I think that some of his research is extremely questionable at best, and just wouldn't stand up to scientific scrutiny, the methods used and the conclusions. Like, I think that would be a really good way to put it about both Jacobs and Hopkins, is their conclusions are not supported by the research methodology and the information they present.
What are your thoughts on John Mack?
I have a lot of respect for John Mack in a way. He was certainly qualified. He was the head of the psychiatric department at psychology department at Harvard for a while. That stated, I also fear that he may have wanted to believe things to a certain extent. I guess he didn't offer conclusions as facts to the extent that Hopkins and Jacobs have and did. But I'm a little questionable about John Mack's, the way he chose to interpret statements that the people he hypnotized gave him, and the way he seems to have interpreted these regressions or relaxation techniques. I would be curious, had he survived, what his work would be now. I feel pretty confident he wouldn't support the direction that some of this went, particularly David Jacobs. But, I mean, you know, where the rubber hits the road, he was a doctor and he was interested in the topic. So people are entitled to be enthusiastic about that. He was a champion of the topic and he was educated. And so people are entitled to be glad that took place. I still don't think that he presented much more than speculation, but I think that he did try to do it relatively responsibly, especially as compared to some of the others.
Right. Now, you, in talking about, like, the quote I read at the beginning, we're talking about the U.S. View of some of this stuff. Now, and over in the U.K., is it Bufora? Banned hypnosis,
and that's like, correct,
and that's similar to MUFON here.
The British UFO Research Association, as early as in the, I believe it was in the 1980s, they put a moratorium on using hypnosis as a investigative technique, and that remains in place. And we're kind of doubtful it will be lifted, especially now after the, you know, what all has taken place in the U.S. and other places. But that's correct. And in that chapter that I wrote about that, I did reference the earlier mentioned Judy Jafar's work as well. And they absolutely, they did not want to have that in the mix and all of the baggage it brought with it. And I understand Jenny Randles was a component in making that happen. And I think they're to be commended on that decision.
I feel like Jenny Randles has made a huge contribution to this field and doesn't really get the acknowledgement that she should.
I think a lot of people share that view with you.
It's just, you know, I mean, a lot of people have never even heard of her. And I wonder if it's partially because she's a woman, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It especially the 80s and 90s didn't fare well for the culture in the UFO community. And you know, there's some circumstances that just out and out misogyny looks like it was prevalent, and the way Emma Woods and Carol Rainey were treated on the old UFO Updates List website was, you know, has been called by some just absolutely unforgivable. And I could name some other websites as well that I think you're right, that the fact that some of these people were women was viewed as making their contributions less than right from the start. And I'm really hoping that we're getting past these just outdated, you know, and antiquated views.
Yeah. The and the other thing with Jenny Randles is she explored so many different ideas. I mean, she was way ahead of everyone else in that type of respect. You know, you look through her different books, and she has such a variety of, like, well, what if it's this, and what if it's this, and what if it's this, and, you know, everyone else, you know, that probably ostracized her as well.
Yeah. I used to enjoy reading her contributions on different E-lists and her interest in what became known as the Oz Factor, and what the reasons that there might be things ranging from outside objective events to symptoms of trauma that might cause people to fail to remember sounds, and or were, did all the sounds stop? And yeah, that she did, and has been persistent. She's been on the scene a long time.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you look at Linda Moulton Howe, and she has the respect of the sort of mainstream UFO field, but she's also towing that line, you know?
Yeah. She, so. Linda Moulton Howe is, some of her stuff to me is kind of difficult to give credibility. Maybe that's what I'm looking to say. I'm not sure where the line is between when a writer quotes people and says, here's what they said, or here's what I think. And like we were saying, it's okay to speculate, and we should differentiate between speculation and fact. But even some speculation is more valid than others, and that when we get into areas that the supposition is so much less likely than some of the other possibilities, it becomes difficult for me to take as serious work or even valuable contributions. And I think a lot of writers, people that maintain websites, people that try to be regular speakers, it's difficult for them to maintain a steady stream of content and material. And that certainly has to come into play as well.
All right, and that is the end of part one with my talk with Jack Brewer. Part two will be up next week. If you don't want to wait, go become a patron. It's only $3. You can get the whole interview right away. We're going to take you out with a song from a band called Laceration of Dissidence. This is O Magnum Mysterium. See you next time.
Second-hand world. Washington.